You're Dead. One of the other stories for men was about Harry Rodney and Little Bert, two petty criminals on an ocean liner that has struck an iceberg and is sinking, with not enough lifeboats for all the passengers. The patriarchal custom was that women and children had precedence for spaces in the boats. Harry gives up his space in a boat in favor of some girl. Bert strips a coat and scarf from an injured woman, steals her jewelry, abandons her below decks, and uses her clothes to sneak into a lifeboat. As it happens, both men survive. But Harry is so disgusted by Bert's crime that he persuades him to run away and pretend he is dead. For years, whenever Bert contacts Harry, Harry tells him to stay away or else the police might discover him. Bert never returns home for fear of being found out. 6. In the panic and confusion, Tyler Durden disappeared. On his seat at the meeting lay a note. I did it. As a first step in responding to the threat to the colony, the Board of Matrons immediately called the question of ostracism, and by evening the population had voted. Tyler Durden was declared invisible. As if that mattered, he could not be found. 7. It took several days for the writing to be erased from the dome. A manhunt did not turn up Tyler. Nerves were on edge. Rumors arose, circulated, were denied. Tyler Durden was still in the colony, in disguise. A cabal of followers was hiding him. No, he and his confederates had a secret outpost 10 kilometers north of the colony. Durden was in the employ of the government of California. He had stockpiled weapons and was planning an attack. He had an atomic bomb. At the gym entrance, AIs checked DNA prints, and Erno was conscious, as never before, of the cameras in every room. He wondered if any monitors had picked up his excursion with Tyler. Every moment he expected a summons on his wristword to come to the assembly offices. When Erno entered the workout room, he found Tyrus and a number of others wearing white t-shirts that said, "Bang, you're dead." Erno took the unoccupied rowing machine next to Ty. Ty was talking to Sid on the other side of him. A woman came across the room to use the machines. She was tightly muscled and her dark hair was pulled back from her sweaty neck. As she approached, the young men went silent and turned to look at her. She hesitated. Erno saw something on her face he had rarely seen on a woman's face before. Fear. The woman turned and left the gym. None of the boys said anything. If the others had recognized what had just happened, they did not let it show. Erno pulled on his machine. He felt the muscles in his legs knot. "Cool shirt," he said. "Tyrus wants to be invisible too," said Sid. Sid wasn't wearing one of the shirts. "Eventually, someone will check the vids of Tyler's performances and see me there," said Ty between strokes. "I'm not ashamed to be Tyler's fan." At 13, Erno and Ty had been fumbling lovers, testing out their sexuality. Now Ty was a blunt, over-muscled guy who laughed like a hyena. He didn't laugh now. "It was a rush to judgment," one of the other boys said. "Tyler didn't harm a single cousin. It was free expression." "He could just as easily have blown a hole in the dome," said Erno. "Do they need any more justification for force?" Ty stopped rowing and turned toward Erno. Where he had sweated through the fabric, the bang on his shirt had turned blood red. "Maybe it will come to force. We do as much work and we're second-class citizens." He started rowing again, pulled furiously at the machine, 50 reps a minute, drawing quick breaths. "That Durden has a pair, doesn't he?" Sid said. Sid was a popular stud boy. His thick chestnut hair dipped below one eye. "You should have seen the look on Rebecca's face when that explosion went off." "I hear if they catch him, the council's not going to stop at invisibility," Erno said. "They'll kick him out." Invisibility won't slow Tyler down, Ty said. Would you obey the decree? He asked Sid. Me? I'm too beautiful to let myself get booted. If Tyler Durden likes masculinists so much, let him go to one of the other colonies or to Earth. I'm getting laid too often. Erno's gut tightened. They will kick him out. My mother would vote for it in a second. Let him try, Ty grunted, still rowing. Is that why you're working out so much lately, Ty? Sid said. Planning to move to Earth? No, I'm just planning to bust your ass. I suspect it's not busting you want to do to my ass. Yeah, your ass has better uses. My mother says Tyler's broken the social contract, Erno said. Does your mother, Ty said, still rowing, keep your balls under her pillow? Sid laughed. Erno wanted to grab Ty and tell him, I was there. I helped him do it. But he said nothing. He pulled on the machine. His face burned. After a minute, Erno picked up his towel and went to the weight machine. No one paid him any attention. 20 minutes later, he hit the sauna. Sweating in the heat, sullen, resentful. He had been there, had taken a bigger risk than any of these fanboys. Coming out of the sauna, he saw Sid heading for the sex rooms, where any woman who was interested could find a male partner who was willing. Erno considered posting himself to one of the rooms. But he wasn't a stud. He was just an anonymous minor male. He had no following. It would be humiliating to sit there waiting for someone, or worse, to be selected by some old bag. A day later, Erno got himself one of the t-shirts. Wearing it didn't make him feel any better. It came to him that maybe this was the test Tyler intended. Not whether Erno would tell about the Philosopher's Stone before it happened, but whether he would admit he'd helped set it after he saw the uproar it caused in the colony. If that was the test, Erno was failing. He thought about calling Tyler's apartment, but the constables were sure to be monitoring that number. A new rumor had it Tyler had been captured and was being held in protective custody. Threats had been made against his life, until the Board of Matrons could decide when and how to impose the invisibility. Erno imagined Tyler in some bare white room, his brain injected with nanoprobes, his neck fitted with a collar. At Biotech, Erno became aware of something he had never noticed before. How the women assumed first pick of the desserts in the cafeteria. Then later, when he walked by their table, four women burst into laughter. He turned and stared at them, but they never glanced at him. Another day, he was talking with a group of engineers on break. Three women, another man, and Erno. Hannah from Materials told a joke. What do you have when you have two little balls in your hand? The other women grinned. Erno watched the other man. He stood as if on a trapdoor, a tentative smile on his face. The man was getting ready to laugh because that was what you did when people told jokes, whether or not they were funny. It was part of the social contract. Somebody went into joke-telling mode and you went into joke-listening mode. A man's undivided attention, Hannah said. The women laughed. The man grinned. How can you tell when a man is aroused? Pearl said. He's breathing. That isn't funny, Erno said. Really? I think it is, Hannah said. It's objectification. Men are just like women. They have emotions, too. Cool off, Erno, said Pearl. This isn't gender equity class. There is no gender equity here. Someone get Erno a t-shirt. Erno wants to be invisible. We're already invisible, Erno said, and stalked off. He left the lab, put on his suit, and took the next bus back to the dome. He quit going to his practicum. He would not let himself be used anymore. He was damned if he would go back there again. A meeting to discuss what to do about the missing comedian was disrupted by a group of young men marching and chanting outside the meeting room. Constables were stationed in public places carrying clubs. In online discussion rooms, people openly advocated closing the men's houses for fear conspiracies were being hatched in them. and Erno received another message. This one was from Harry Callahan. Are you watching, Erno? If you think our gender situation is gross, you can change it. Check exposition. Crimes of violence. The incidence of crimes of violence among the cousins is vanishingly small. Colony archives record 8 murders in 60 years. 5 of them were man against man, 2 man against woman, and 1 woman against woman. This does not count vigilante acts of women against men, but despite the lack of official statistics, such incidents too are rare. 8. It's no trick to be celibate when you don't like sex. That's the point, Erno insisted. He does like sex. He likes sex fine, but he's making a sacrifice in order to establish his point. He's not going to be a prisoner of his dick. Erno was sitting on the ledge of the terrace in front of their apartment, chucking pebbles at the recycling bin at the corner, and arguing with his cousin Lena. He had been arguing with a lot of people lately and not getting anywhere. Every morning he still left as if he were going to biotech, but instead, he hung out in the park or gym. It would take some time for his mother to realize he had dropped out. Lena launched into a tirade, and Erno was suddenly very tired of it all. Before she could gain any momentum, he threw a last pebble that whanged off the bin, got up, and, without a word, retreated into the apartment. He could hear Lena's squawk behind him. He went to his room and opened a screen on his wall. The latest news was that Tashi Yokiyo-san had regained consciousness, but that he had suffered neurological damage that might take a year or more to repair. Debate on the situation raged on the net. Erno opened his documents locker and fiddled with a melancholy sonnet he was working on, but he wasn't in the mood. He switched back to Tyler's cryptic message. You can change it, check exposition. It had something to do with biotech, Erno was pretty sure. He had tried the public databases but had not come up with anything. There were databases accessible only through the biotech labs, but he would have to return to his practicum to view them. And that would mean he would have to explain his absence. He wasn't ready for that yet. On impulse, Erno looked up Tyler in the colony's genome database. What was the name Deborah's daughter had called him? Marison? Thomas Marison? He found Tyler's genome. Nothing about it stood out. Debaters had linked Tyler's bio to the genome. Marison had been born 36 years ago. His mother was a second-generation cousin. His grandmother had arrived with the third colonization contingent in 2038. He had received a general education, neither excelling nor failing anything. His mother had died when he was 20. He had moved out into the dorms, had worked uneventfully in construction and repair for 14 years, showing no sign of rebelliousness before reinventing himself as Tyler Durden the comedian. Until 2 years ago, absolutely nothing had distinguished him from any of 1,000 male cousins. Bored, Erno looked up his own genome. There he lay in rows of base pairs, neat as a tile floor. Over at biotech, some insisted that everything you were was fixed in those sequences in black and white. Erno didn't buy it. Where was the gene for desire there, or hope, or despair, or frustration? Where was the gene that said he would sit in front of a computer screen at the age of 17, boiling with rage? He called up his mother's genome. There were her sequences. Some were the same as his. Of course, there was no information about his father. To prevent dire social consequences, his father must remain a blank spot in his history, as far as the society of cousins was concerned. Maybe some families kept track of such things, but nowhere in the databases were fathers and children linked. Of course, they couldn't stop him from finding out. He knew others who had done it. His father's genome was somewhere in the database, for medical purposes. If he removed from his own those sequences that belonged to his mother, Then what was left, at least the sequences she had not altered when she had planned him, belonged to his father. He could cross-check those against the genomes of all the colony's men. From his chart, he stripped those genes that matched his mother's. Using what remained, he prepared a search engine to sort through the colony's males. The result was a list of 6 names. 3 were brothers: Stuart, Simon, and Joseph Bettison. He checked the available public information on them. They were all in their 90s, 40 years older than Erno's mother. Of the remaining men, 2 were of about her age: Sidney Orindison and Micah Avison. Of those 2, Micah Avison had the higher correlation with Erno's genome. He read the public records for Micah Avison. Born in 2042, he would be 56 years old. A physical address: men's dormitory, East 5 Lava Tube. He keyed it into his notebook. Without knocking, his mother came into the room. Though he had no reason to be ashamed of his search, Erno shoved the notebook into his pocket. She did not notice. "Erno, we need to talk." "By talk, do you mean interrogate or lecture?" His mother's face stiffened. For the first time, he noticed the crow's feet at the corners of her eyes. She moved around his room, picking up his clothes, sorting, putting them away. "You should keep your room cleaner. Your room is a reflection of your mind." "Please, mother." She held one of his shirts to her nose, sniffed, and made a face. "Did I ever tell you about the time I got arrested? I was 13, and Derek Silviason and I were screwing backstage in the middle of a performance of A Doll's House. We got a little carried away. When Nora opened the door to leave at the end of the second act, she tripped over Derek and me in our second act." "They arrested you? Why?" "The head of the board was a prude. It wouldn't have mattered so much, but A Doll's House was her favorite play." "You and Derek Silviason were lovers?" She sat down on his bed, a meter from him, and leaned forward. "After the paint bombing, Erno, they went back to examine the recordings from the specs of the officers at the oxygen warehouse riot. Who do you suppose, to my surprise, they found there?" Erno swiveled in his chair to avoid her eyes. "Nick already told you I went there." "But you didn't. Not only were you there, but at one point you were together with Durden." "What was I doing?" "Don't be difficult. I'm trying to protect you, Erno. The only reason I know about this is that Harold Gundason let me know on the sly. Another report says Durden met you outside the North Airlock one day. You're likely to be called in for questioning. I want to know what's going on. Are you involved in some conspiracy?" His mother looked so forlorn he found it hard to be hostile. "As far as I know, there is no conspiracy." "Did you have something to do with the paint bomb?" "No, of course not." "I found out you haven't been to your practicum. What have you been doing?" "I've been going to the gym." "Are you planning a trip to Earth?" "Don't be stupid, mother." "Honestly, Erno, I can't guess what you were thinking. You're acting like a spy." "Maybe I am a spy." His mother laughed. "Don't laugh at me." "I'm not laughing because you're funny. I'm laughing because I'm scared. This is an ugly business, Erno." "Stop it, mother, please." She stared at him. He tried not to look away. "I want you to listen. Tyler Durden is a destroyer. I've been to Aristarchus, to Tycho. I've seen the patriarchy. Do you want that here?" "How would I know? I've never been there." His eyes fell on the copy of Stories for Men. "Don't tell me stories about rape and carnage," he said, looking at the book's cover. "I've heard them all before. You crammed them down my throat with my baby food." "They're true. Do you deny them?" Erno clenched his jaw, tried to think. Did she have to browbeat him? "I don't know." "It's not just carnage. It's waste and insanity. You want to know what they're like? One time I had a talk with the security man at Shackleton. They were mining lunar ice for reaction mass in the shuttles. I put it to him that using lunar ice for rocket fuel was criminally wasteful. Water is the most precious commodity on the moon. and here they are blowing it into space. He told me it was cheaper to use lunar ice than haul water from Earth. My argument wasn't with him, he said. It was with the laws of the marketplace. Like most of them, he condescended to me, as if I were a child or idiot. He thought that invoking the free market settled the issue, as if to go against the market were to go against the laws of nature. The goal of conquering space justified the expenditure, he said, that they'd get more water somewhere else when they used up the lunar ice. He's got an argument. The market as a law of nature? Conquering space? How do you conquer space? That's not a goal. It's a disease. What does this have to do with Tyler Durden? Durden is bringing the disease here. He's fighting oppression. Men have no power here. They are stifled and ignored. There are no real male cousins. There are plenty of male cousins. There are lots of role models. Think of Adil Al-Hafez or Peter Saracen. Of Nick, for pity's sake. Nick? Nick? Erno laughed. He stood. You might as well leave now, officer. His mother looked hurt. Officer? That's why you're here, isn't it? Erno, I know you don't like me. I'm dull and conventional, but being unconventional by itself isn't a virtue. I'm your mother, and you're a cop. That stopped her for a moment. She took a deep breath. I dearly love you, Erno, but if you think... That tone of voice. He'd heard it all his life. All the personal anecdotes are over now. We're done with persuasion, and it's time for you to do what I say. You dearly love nothing, Erno shouted. All you want is to control me. She started to get up. I've given you every chance. Erno threw stories for men at her. His mother flinched, and the book struck her in the chest and fell slowly to the floor. She looked more startled than hurt, watching the book fall, tumbling, leaves open. She looked as if she were trying to understand what it was. But when she faced him again, her eyes clouded. Trembling, livid, she stood and started to speak. Before she could say a word, Erno ran from the room. Property. A man on his own is completely isolated. Other men might be his friends or lovers, but if he has a legal connection to anyone, it is to his mother. Beyond a certain point, property among the cousins is the possession of the community. Private property passes down from woman to woman, but only outside of the second degree of blood relation. A woman never inherits from her biological mother. A woman chooses her friends and mates, and in the event of her death, her property goes to them. If a woman dies without naming an heir, her property goes to the community. A man's property is typically confined to personal possessions. Of course, in most families, he is petted and has access to more resources than any female. But the possessions are gotten for him by his mother or his mate, and they belong to her. What property he might hold beyond that belongs to his mother. If he has no mother, then it belongs to his oldest sister. If he has no sister, then it goes to the community. A man who forsakes his family has nowhere to go. 9. The great jazzmen were all persecuted minorities. Black men like Armstrong, Ellington, Coltrane, Parker, and the comedians were all Jews and black men. Leaving his mother's apartment, Erno saw himself the latest in history's long story of abused fighters for expressive freedom. Erno stalked around the perimeter road, head down. To his left, beyond the parapet, the crater's inner slope, planted with groundsel, wildflowers, and hardy low-G modifications of desert scrub, fell away down to the agricultural fields, the park, and 2 kilometers distant, clear through the low-moisture air, the aspen-forested opposite slopes. To his right rose the ranks of apartments, refectories, dorms, public buildings, and labs, clusters of oblong boxes growing higgledy-piggledy, planted with vines and hanging gardens, divided by ramps and stairs and walkways, a high-tech cliff city in pastel concrete glittering with ilmenite crystals. A small green lizard scuttled across the pebbled composite of the roadway and disappeared among some ground cover. Erno ignored the people on their way to work and back, talking or playing. He felt like smashing something. But smashing things was not appropriate cousin's behavior. In the southwest quad, he turned up a ramp into a residential district. These were newer structures, products of the last decade's planned expansion of living quarters, occupied for the most part by new families. He moved upward by steady leaps, feeling the tension on his legs, enjoying the burn it generated. Near the top of the rim wall, he found Gilman 334. He pressed the door button. The screen remained blank. But after a moment, Alicia's voice came from the speaker. "Erno, come on in." The door opened and he entered the apartment. It consisted mostly of an open lounge, furnished in woven furniture, with a couple of small rooms adjoining. Six young women were sitting around inhaling mood enhancers, listening to music. The music was Monk, Brilliant Corners. Erno had given it to Alicia. She would never have encountered 20th century jazz otherwise. There was something wrong with Monk in this context. These girls ought to be listening to some lunar music, one of the airy mixed choral groups, or Shari Cloud's daughter's Drums in Sunlight. In this circle of females, the tossed-off lines of Sonny Rollins' sax, the splayed rhythms of Monk's piano, seemed as if they were being stolen, or worse still, studied, by a crew of aliens for whom they could not mean what they meant to Erno. "Hello," Erno said. "Am I crashing your party?" "You're not crashing," Alicia took him by the arm. "This is Erno," she said to the others. "Some of you know him." Sharon was there, one of the hottest women in Alicia's cohort at school. He had heard Sid talk about her. He recognized Betty Sarah's daughter, Liz Beth's daughter, both of them, like Alicia, studying social work, both of whom had turned him down at one time or another. Erno liked women as individuals, but in a group, their intimate laughter, gossip, and private jokes, as completely innocent as they might be, made him feel like he knew nothing about them. He drew Alicia aside. "Can we talk in private?" "Sure." She took Erno to one of the bedrooms. She sat on the bed, gestured to a chair. "What's the matter?" "I had a fight with my mother." "That's what mothers are for, as far as I can tell." "And the constables are going to call me in for questioning. They think I may be involved in some conspiracy with Tyler Durden." "Do you know where he is?" Erno's defenses came up. "Do you care?" "I don't want to know where he is. If you know, keep it to yourself. I'm not your mother." "I could be in trouble." "A lot of us will stand behind you on this, Erno. Sharon and I would." She reached out to touch his arm. "I'll go down to the center with you." Erno moved to the bed beside her. He slid his hand to her waist, closed his eyes, and rubbed his cheek against her hair. To his surprise, he felt her hand between his shoulder blades. He kissed her and she leaned back. He looked into her face, her green eyes, troubled, searched his. Her bottom lip was full. He kissed her again, slid his hand to her breast, and felt the nipple taut beneath her shirt. Leave aside the clumsiness, struggling out of their clothes, the distraction of Straight No Chaser from the other room, Erno's momentary thought of the women out there wondering what was going on in here, and it was the easiest thing in the world. He slid into Alicia as if he were coming home. Though his head swirled with desire, he tried to hold himself back to give her what she wanted. He kissed her all over. She giggled and teased him and twisted her fingers in his hair to pull him down to her, biting his lip. For 15 or 20 minutes, the society of cousins disappeared. Erno watched her face, watched her closed eyes and parted lips as she concentrated on her pleasure. It gave him a feeling of power. Her skin flushed, she gasped, shuddered, and he came. He rested his head upon her breast, eyes closed, breathing deeply, tasting the salt of her sweat. Her chest rose and fell, and he could hear her heart beating fast, then slower. He held her tight. Neither said anything for a long time. After a while, he asked her quietly, "Can I stay here?" Alicia stroked his shoulder, slid out from beneath him, and began to pull on her shirt. "I'll talk to Sharon." "Sharon." Erno wondered how many of the other women in the next room Alicia was sleeping with. Alicia was part of that whole scene. Young men and women playing complex mating games that Erno was no good at. He had no idea what talking to Sharon might involve. But Alicia acted as if the thought of him moving in was a complete surprise. "Don't pull a muscle or anything stretching to grasp the concept," Erno said softly. Alicia reacted immediately. "Erno, we've never exchanged two words about partnering. What do you expect me to say?" "We did talk about it in the park. You said you would talk to Sharon then. Why didn't you?" "Please, Erno." She drew up her pants and the fabric seamed itself closed over her lovely long legs. "When you're quiet, you're so sweet." "Sweet." Erno felt vulnerable, lying there naked with the semen drying on his belly. He reached for his clothes. "That's right," he muttered. "I forgot, sex is the social glue. Fuck him so he doesn't cause any trouble." "Everything isn't about your penis, Erno. Durden is turning you into some self-destructive boy. Grow up."
"Grow up?"
Erno tugged on his pants. "You don't want me grown up. You want the sweet boy forever. I figured it out now. You're never even there with me except maybe your body. At least, I think it was you." Alicia stared at him. Erno recognized that complete exasperation. He had seen it on his mother. From the next room drifted the sound of Blue Monk and women laughing. "Sharon was right," Alicia said, shaking her head. And she chuckled, a little rueful gasp, as if to say, "I can't believe I'm talking with this guy." Erno took a step forward and slapped her face. "You bitch," he breathed. "You fucking bitch." Alicia fell back, her eyes wide with shock. Erno's head spun. He fled the room, ran through the party, and out of the apartment. It was full night now, the dome sprinkled with stars. He stalked down the switchback ramps toward the perimeter road, through the light thrown by successive lampposts, in a straight-legged gait that kicked him off the pavement with every stride. He hoped that anyone who saw him would see his fury and think him dangerous. Down on the road, he stood at the parapet, breathing through his mouth and listening to the hum of insects in the fields below. In the lamplight far to his left, a person in a green uniform appeared. On impulse, Erno hopped over the parapet to the slope. Rather than wait for the constable to pass, he bounced off down toward the crater's floor, skidding where it was steep, his shoes kicking up dust. He picked up speed, making headlong 4 or 5 meter leaps, risking a fall every time his feet touched. It was too fast. 30 meters above the floor, he stumbled and went flying face forward. He came down sideways, rolled, and slammed his head as he flipped and skidded to a halt. He lay, trying to catch his breath. He felt for broken limbs. His shirt was torn and his shoulder ached. He pulled himself up and went down the last few meters to the crater floor, then limped through the fields for Sobieski Park. In a few minutes, he was there, out of breath and sweating. At the fountain, he splashed water on his face. He felt his shoulder gingerly, then made his way to the amphitheater. At first, he thought the theater was deserted, but then he saw, down on the stage, a couple of women necking, oblivious of him. He stood in the row where he had spotted Alicia some weeks before. He had hit her. He couldn't believe he had hit her.
10. Erno slept in the park and in the morning headed for his biotech shift as if he had never stopped going. No one at the airlock questioned him. Apparently, even though his mind was chaos, he looked perfectly normal. The radiation warning had been renewed. Solar monitors reported conditions ripe for a coronal mass ejection. Cousins obliged to go out on the surface were being advised to keep within range of a radiation shelter. When Erno arrived at the bunker, he went to Lemmy Odilson's lab. Lemmy had not yet arrived. He sat down at his workstation, signed on to the system, pressed his thumb against the gene scanner, and accessed the database. He tried the general index. There was no file named Exposition. Following Tyler's reference to Gross, he looked for any references to the number 144. Nothing. Nothing on the gross structures of nucleotides either. He tried coming at it from the virus index. Dozens of viruses had been engineered by the cousins to deal with problems from soil microbes to cellular breakdowns caused by exposure to surface radiation. There was no virus called Exposition. While he sat there, Lemmy showed up. He said nothing of Erno's sudden appearance after his extended absence. "We're making progress on integrating the morphological growth genes into the prototypes," he said excitedly. "The sequences for extracting silicon from the soil are falling into place."
"That's good," Erno said.
He busied himself cleaning up the chaos Lemmy typically left in his notes. After a while, he asked casually, "Lemmy, have you ever heard about a virus called Exposition?"
"Exposition?"
Lemmy said vaguely, not looking up from a rack of test bulbs. "Those prefixes go with female sex-linked factors. The Y position are the male."
"Oh, right."
As soon as Erno was sure Lemmy was caught up in his lab work, he turned back to the archives. First, he went to GenderSites, a database he knew mostly for its concentration of anti-cancer modifications. Exposition led him to an encyclopedia of information on the X chromosome. Erno called up a number of files, but he saw no point in digging through gene libraries at random. He located a file of experiments on female-linked syndromes from osteoporosis to postmenopausal cardiac conditions. On a whim, he did a search on Gross. Up popped a file named Nucleotide Repeats. When Erno opened the file, the heading read, "Get rid of slimy girls." The sounds of the lab around him faded as he read the paper. It described a method for increasing the number of unstable trinucleotide repeats on the X chromosome. All humans had repeat sequences, the presence of which were associated with various diseases: spinal and bulbar muscular atrophy, Fragile X mental retardation, myotonic dystrophy, Huntington disease, spinocerebellar ataxia, dentatorubral pallidoluysian atrophy, and Machado-Joseph disease, all well-understood neurological disorders. In normal DNA, the repeats were below the level of expression of disease. Standard tests of the zygote assured this. The Gross paper told how to construct two viruses. The first would plant a time bomb in the egg. At a particular stage of embryonic development, the repetition of trinucleotides would explode. The second virus would plant compensating sequences on the Y chromosome. Creating the viruses would be a tricky but not impossible problem in plasmid engineering. Their effect, however, would be devastating. In males, the Y chromosome would suppress the X-linked diseases, but in females, the trinucleotide syndromes would be expressed. When the repeats kicked in, the child would develop any one of a host of debilitating or fatal neurological disorders. Of course, once the disorder was recognized, other gene engineers would go to work curing it, or at least identifying possessors prenatally. The Gross virus would not destroy the human race, but it could burden a generation of females with disease and early death. Tyler had led Erno to this monstrosity. What was he supposed to do with it? Nonetheless, Erno downloaded the file into his notebook. He had just finished when Clooney came into the lab. Hello, Professor Odilson, Clooney said to Lemmy. He saw Erno and did a double take. Erno stared back at him.
I'm not a professor, Michael, Lemmy said.
Clooney pointed at Erno.
You know the constables are looking for him.
They are? Why?
Erno got up.
Don't bother explaining. I'll go.
Clooney moved to stop him.
Wait a minute.
Erno put his hand on Clooney's shoulder to push him aside. Clooney grabbed Erno's arm.
What's going on? Lemmy asked.
Erno tried to free himself from Clooney, but the Earthman's grip was firm. Clooney pulled him, and pain shot through the shoulder Erno had hurt in yesterday's spill. Erno hit Clooney in the face. Clooney's head jerked back, but he didn't let go. His jaw clenched and his expression hardened into animal determination. He wrestled with Erno. They lost their balance and in slow motion stumbled against a lab bench. Lemmy shouted and two women ran in from the next lab. Before Erno knew it, he was pinned against the floor. Dead man. Many of the stories for men were about murder. The old Earthwriters seemed fascinated by murder and wrote about it from a dozen perspectives. In one of the stories, a detective whose job it is to throw illegal riders off cargo trains finds a destitute man, a hobo, hiding on the train. While being brutally beaten by the detective, the hobo strikes back and unintentionally kills him. The punishment for such a killing, even an accidental one, is death. Terrified, knowing that he has to hide his guilt, the hobo hurries back to the city. He pretends he never left the flophouse where he spent the previous night. He disposes of his clothes, dirty with coal dust from the train. Then he reads a newspaper report. The detective's body has been found, but the investigators assume that he fell off the train and was killed by accident and are not seeking anyone. The hobo is completely free from suspicion. His immediate reaction is to go to the nearest police station and confess. 11. Erno waited in a small white room at the constabulary headquarters. As a child, Erno had come here many times with his mother, but now everything seemed different. He was subject to the force of the state. That fucking cow, Clooney. The constables had taken his notebooks. Was that pro forma, or would they search it until they found the gross file? He wondered what Alicia had done after he'd left the day before. What had she told her friends? The door opened and two women came in. One of them was tall and good-looking. The other was small with a narrow face and close-cropped blonde hair. She looked to be a little younger than his mother. She sat down across from him. The tall woman remained standing.
This can be simple, Erno, if you let it, the small woman said.
She had an odd drawl that, combined with her short stature, made Erno wonder if she was from Earth.
Tell us where Tyler Durden is, and about the conspiracy.
Erno folded his arms across his chest.
I don't know where he is. There is no conspiracy.
Do we have to show you images of you and him together during the oxygen warehouse riot?
I never saw him before that or since. We were just hiding in the back room.
You had nothing to do with the smart paint explosion?
No.
The tall woman, who still had not spoken, looked worried. The blonde interrogator leaned forward, resting her forearms on the table.
Your DNA was found at the access portal where the device was set.
Erno squirmed. He imagined a sequence of unstable nucleotide triplets multiplying in the woman's cells.
He asked me to help him. I had no idea what it was.
No idea. So it could have been a bomb big enough to blow a hole in the dome. Yet you told no one about it.
I knew he wasn't going to kill anyone. I could tell.
The interrogator leaned back.
I hope you will excuse the rest of us if we question your judgment.
Believe me, I would never do anything to hurt a cousin. Ask my mother.
The tall woman finally spoke.
We have. She does say that. But you have to help us out, Erno. I'm sure you can understand how upset all this has made the polity.
Forget it, Kim, the other said. Erno here is not going to betray his lover.
Tyler's not my lover, Erno said.
The blonde interrogator smirked.
Right.
The tall one said,
There's nothing wrong with you being lovers, Erno.
Then why did this one bring it up?
No special reason, said the blonde. I'm just saying you wouldn't betray him.
Well, we're not lovers.
Too bad, the blonde muttered.
You need to help us, Erno, the tall one said. Otherwise, even if we let you go, you're going to be at risk of violence from other cousins.
Only if you tell everyone about me.
So we should just let you go and not inconvenience you by telling others the truth about you, said the blonde.
What truth? You don't know me.
She came out of her chair, leaning forward on her clenched fists. Her face was flushed.
Don't know you. I know all about you.
Mona, calm down, the other woman said.
Calm down? Earth history is full of this. Men sublimate their sexual attraction in claims of brotherhood, with the accompanying military fetishism, penis-comparing, suicidal conquer-or-die movements. Durden is heading for one of those classic orgasmic Armageddons. Masada, Hitler in the Bunker, David Koresh, September 11th, the California Massacre.
The tall one grabbed her shoulder and tried to pull her back.
Mona.
Mona threw off the restraining hand and pushed her face up close to Erno's.
If we let this little shit go, I guarantee you he'll be involved in some transcendent destructive act. Suicidally brave, suicidally cowardly, aimed at all of us. The signs are all over him.
Spittle flew in Erno's face.
You're crazy, Erno said. If I wanted to fuck him, I would just fuck him.
The tall one tried again.
Come away, officer.
Mona grabbed Erno by the neck.
Where is he? Come away now.
The tall cop yanked the small woman away, and she fell back. She glared at Erno. The other, tugging her by the arm, pulled her out of the room. Erno tried to catch his breath. He wiped his sleeve across his sweating face. He sat there alone for a long time, touching the raw skin where she had gripped his neck. Then the door opened and his mother came in.
Mom!
She carried some things in her hands, put them on the table. It was the contents of his pockets, including his notebook.
Get up.
What's going on? Just shut up and come with me. We're letting you go. Erno stumbled from the chair.
That officer is crazy.
Never mind her. I'm not sure she isn't right. It's up to you to prove she isn't. She hustled him out of the office and into the hall. In seconds, Erno found himself, dizzy, in the plaza outside the headquarters.
You are not out of trouble. Go home and stay there, his mother said, and hurried back inside.
Passersby in North 6 watched him as he straightened his clothes. He went to sit on the bench beneath the acacia trees at the Lava Tube Center. He caught his breath. Erno wondered if the cop would follow through with her threat to tell about his helping with the explosion. He felt newly vulnerable. But it was not just vulnerability he felt. He had never seen a woman lose it as clearly as the interrogator had. He had gotten to her in a way he had never gotten to a matron in his life. She was actually scared of him.
Now what?
He put his hand in his pocket and felt the notebook. He pulled it out. He switched it on. The gross file was still there, and so was the address he'd written earlier.